Welcome to Science in Africa, a Nature Careers podcast series. I'm Akin Jimo, Chief Editor of Nature Africa. I work and live in Lagos, and I'm passionate about promoting science and public health journalism in my native Nigeria and across Africa. In this series, we explore the practice of science in this wonderful continent, the progress, the issues, the needs, and in the words of African scientists who are based here. In this episode, we meet two women from Ghana and Cameroon who both have two careers, one as a scientist and another as a mother. I wanted to know, what challenges do they face in a male-dominated field? And how do they strike that balance between work and parenthood? First, I spoke to Angela Tabiri, a researcher and lecturer at the African Institute for Mathematical Sciences, Ghana. She's a mathematician with a focus on quantum algebra. Let me ask you, how did you get into mathematics?
That's an interesting one. So one of my motivations is that maths gives you a challenge. In secondary school, maths and growing up was a bit easy to solve, but at the university it was a bit challenging. You are given problem sets and you have to spend time thinking what tricks work, discussing with colleagues. So it kept me thinking a lot, and for me, I like a challenge. So one thing that inspires me is having a challenge and working persistently towards it and finally having to be able to solve it. For me, I see it to be quite inspiring. And also one of my inspirations is the fact that mathematics is a core for every subject or all the sciences. So being good at maths and being able to teach it very well means that I'll be able to impact pharmacists, medical doctors, agriculturalists, and a diverse range of careers. So it's more about the impact a good lecture in mathematics will have in a student's life. Yes.
You know, I'm curious to know about this megastar that your life revolved, about. Tell us about your child.
My child, okay. That was okay. So my child,
the mega star.
Yes, so she's Rosa. Rosa named after both my mom and my husband's mom. They both have roses in their names. So we named her Rosa, and her middle name is Minajua, which is from our local language. So I'm Fanti. So yes, Mina means my mom, and Ajua is the Mande female name in my language. So Mina Ajua means my mom Ajua. I was born on a Mande, so if I call her Mina Ajua, it means she's also named after me. But my husband's mom was born on a Mande, the great grandmother was born on a Mande, so she's named after generations of moms who are Ajua, so she's Mina Ajua, and my husband is Jampo, so she's Rosa Mina Ajua Jampo. And I believe maybe when she was on her journey, I used to talk a lot on Zoom, so she got used to me talking on like this. So anytime I'm in such meetings, she's interested in listening in, so she's just quiet listening in to it. So she's a good listener. She's curious and she's also adventurous. Yes, so that's a bit about Mina Ajua. My megastar.
How old is she now?
She's 5 months.
Wow.
Yes.
in terms of the help that is available, especially in Ghana, you know, to address the challenges, what kind of help is available? And is this enough?
Yeah, so in terms of help, institutionally, the government requires that you stay home for 3 months maternity leave before you come. And once you resume, by law, you can close at 2 p.m. until your child is 6 months old. So the assumption is that you are breastfeeding. So you have to close early in order to breastfeed your child until your child is 6 months old. So I'll say there's some sort of support from institutions. In terms of families, I think in Ghana, families do quite very well. So very often you have mothers being the ones who take care of their children's babies when they have. So grandmothers are mainly the core support when it comes to childcare in Ghana. We don't have, it's not like the UK where you have, for instance, maybe the government paying for you to have your child in a crèche for some hours. We don't have that here. It's mainly you taking the initiative to either take your child to a crèche or having a family member taking care of your child. You know?
That's great. You know, as a mother, how do you manage work and childcare?
Yeah.
You can also dwell on the challenges.
Okay.
How do you manage work and childcare?
Okay. So I manage it by depending on my support system, which is very important. After my maternity leave, I wanted to return to work, and I couldn't return to work with my baby. So that's where one challenge is. The challenge is that we don't have nursing rooms here, we don't have play areas here. So if you bring your child will be in the office, and it's not conducive for the child, right? So one of the challenges that we don't have that infrastructure to cater for nursing mothers in most of our institutions. So once I needed to come, I had to fall on my support system. So two of my primary child caregivers have been my husband and my mom. So my mom currently lives with us at home, and anytime I'm coming to the office, she takes care of my baby. Once I go back to the house, I take my child from, which has really helped, because without that, I don't think I'll even be here, because she had to take my baby this morning. Sometimes I'm even at home and I have meetings and I have to close the door and give the baby to her. She's crying, she has to feed.
Your mom is your support system.
One of my support systems. She's been very supportive. And the second has been my husband. So I have a very supportive husband. When I said I was going to return to work, he didn't stop me from it. He knew this is my life.
He has no choice. Your achievement is his achievement also.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, definitely. He's proud of what I do. So he supports me. So in terms of, okay, I don't like to drive a lot. So very often, like this morning, for instance, when I'm coming to work, he comes with me in the evening. Sometimes you want to eat and the baby is crying. You have to take care of the baby, and also taking a 1 month leave from work. So at his work, they give paternity leave 1 month when your wife gives birth. So he took his, it just ended on 1st April, so the whole of the month of March he was at home, which meant that when I was leaving home, it wasn't just my mom who take care of the baby, but my husband was there to take care of the baby in the evening, who could help. So I've depended so much on my support system, my mom and my husband. They have been my primary childcare providers. Of course, the larger family is there, but these have been my core childcare providers. In terms of the challenges, I mentioned the lack of breastfeeding rooms. In Ghana, I'm yet to see any institution where we have breastfeeding. Yes, I think some corporate organizations have, but in terms of the educational institutions, it's hard to find one where you have all these. So it's a challenge for most working moms, because you want to be sure. So personally, I want my child to be breastfed. So how do I ensure this? It means that I have to spend time each morning expressing milk for her before I leave home, to make sure she has some to drink whilst I'm away, and when I return to have to express for the next day. So it's all time consuming. So you have to plan your time well, so that I could even make it to this interview on time. Yes, so that's one of the challenges. We don't have infrastructure to support a lot of young moms in Ghana. Yeah.
My name is Amani Adija. I'm a physician, public health specialist, vaccinologist to be. I'm also a faculty and researcher at the Faculty of Medicine and Biomedical Sciences of the University of Yaoundé 1 in Cameroon, sub-director of vaccination at the Ministry of Public Health of Cameroon, and currently a World Health Organization consultant for the acceleration of COVID-19 vaccination in Africa, working in Kinshasa but based in Brazzaville at the regional office of WHO for Africa. It started first of all with medicine. When I was growing, my mother was very ill. And I think I spent most of my childhood in hospitals because she underwent many surgical operations. I always remember we're sitting in the waiting room waiting for the doctor to tell us how the operation went, and then he will come with a smile. It went very well. Your mother is alive. And I was like, every time you have to go to the hospital, I want to be able to take care of my mother and to see what is not going on. Because after all the surgery, she was still ill. We were keeping going to hospitals. And so that's how I decided to do medicine, to be able to bring a solution to the health problems of my mother. So during my studies, I've learned that treatment is good, but you are treating just one patient at a time. But if you want to have a big impact, if you want to bring solutions to the problem of underdeveloped countries like Cameroon, then you have to take a public health approach where you can act at the upstream, preventing people from getting sick and then really making a difference. I'm a mother of two sons. My first son is almost 15 now, and the second is 3 years. And yes, it has not been very easy because my first son was born when before I traveled to the US. And I was like, if I stay here, I will lose the scholarship. And it was not possible for me to travel with a baby in the US. It was a new country. I didn't know where to go. So I was very fortunate to have my parents who were very supportive. So as soon as I delivered, I left the baby with my parents. I'm a strong advocate of breastfeeding, and I was not able to breastfeed my son myself because I needed to go for my studies. And luckily everything went well. So now he's in high school. And then my second child, son was born in 2018. I was head of child health at the Ministry of Public Health. And now I am in Kinshasa. None of them are with me. My second son is still with my mother. I'm so fortunate to have a supportive mother who understands that my career is important to me, but at the same time, I need to have a family because, you know, I'm growing old. So you have to try to balance these two, and then because I have a very supportive mother, I think I've been able to move, to advance without too much struggle. So, yes, I think that we need to do more efforts into having a support system, particularly for women who want to advance in their career. We can't rely on men. They are busy themselves looking for money to be able to keep their family. And so we women, and particularly working women, will benefit if we have, like, at work, some places where we can keep our breast milk, some places where we can breastfeed, some places where we know that our children are safe, and then by the end of the day, probably leave and take them home. And it's again more difficult for us who travel a lot, because it's not just like I have a 9-to-5 job. I travel a lot, so this is another challenge, because when you travel, you also need a support system who will be able to somebody reliable enough to be able to look after your kids, and so that wherever you are, you can do your work one-minded. That not your one mind is in your country, because you are not sure what is going on around. And so I think we lack this, and this is and the burden of motherhood fall heavily on women. And I think that's one of the reasons that we don't have enough women emerging in careers, particularly in sciences.
Both Angela and Adija are determined to forge successful careers despite the barriers caused by a lack of organized childcare. African science faces the same leaky pipeline, where talented female scientists leave research because of the barriers they face in society to career progression. This is Adija's experience.
Definitely. It's not like I feel like I'm a woman living in one world. It is a fact. We had just a meeting was last week, even here in Kinshasa, and I noticed I was the only woman in the room. They were all men, because it was a high level meeting. And I was like, wow, only men in the room. And I was like, I felt like sometimes you have issues, you raise issues, and they don't understand, because I think for some issue is women will have understood better what you are talking about, particularly when it's not hard science or like tangible kind of stuff. That's the feeling I had. It's a fact. Even when you go to the Ministry of Public Health, we look at the directors. So those are the top position directors, and we find ourselves 10 out of 11 directors, 10 are men. There's only one woman at the Ministry of Public Health of Cameroon. So it's not like a feeling, it's a fact that women stay at a lower stage or lower rank because of many barriers. And then people who get to the top position are men. It's a fact. This is a very tough question, particularly in Africa, where gender, where roles are usually defined by gender, where even when you are in a high-level meeting, people think that it's the woman who should bring coffee. Even when you are with your male colleagues, so when there's something that's related to kitchen or to food or to, you know, this traditional women rule, even sometimes with your junior colleagues, but they think that you should be the one to do that. And when you don't, you are like the bad woman. Like, so first of all, even it starts from the childhood, because we think that women should do, literature things. They should not do math. Math and science are for boys. This is where the thing starts. So usually, even when I was in high school, so for when we go to science and you see that there are more boys into mathematics and all of this, but less girls, because they say science is not for women. So it starts from there. And when we reach the university, the gap is growing. One of the things that was done in Cameroon to address that is that for the Faculty of Medicine, when I was I was admitted in 2000, 25% were women, 75% were men. But there was a policy that was initiated by the government where we had to take equal number of men and women in the Faculty of Medicine. And since then, the number of women, I think women are growing, the number of women are much higher compared to men now at the Faculty of Medicine and Biomedical Sciences. Now, this first hurdle has been addressed, But now there's a second hurdle, because when we look at full professors, I'm also a faculty, I'm still assistant, but when we look at full professor, they are practically only men. Few women reach to the full tenure at in faculty. So even as we have now the same number of women and men who graduate from the medical school, now for the specialty, not all the women will go to the specialty because some will get married and their husband will not. I even have a friend, her husband did not allow her to go into specialty because he believed that she already working and she doesn't need to continue. So this has creating, this is creating another gap. And then now for when we want to go and teach also, to grow from assistant lecturer to full tenure, the gap is still very important. So I think as one of this policy that was done at the faculty meeting where we have to admit equal number of women and men has helped address the issue. I think that even at the policy level position, we should lend a hand more to women as well as men. We are not competing on the same level. I have two full-time jobs. When I come back from my job, I have to make sure that there's enough food, that my children have eaten, that, men don't have to do that. It's true, I'm not married, so I have less of this burden compared to my colleague, but still, it falls on me. My mother was sick recently. I have three brothers, but I was the one in the hospital because they think that it's the woman who should stay clean for look after the mother, take the food and all of this. And at the school, at my work, I spent 2 weeks, I was not there. And they were like, where are you? We need you here. So there's an ingrained thinking where there are certain roles that should be devoted to women. So if you want to find solution, it's at many levels. First of all, the mindset. That's how where everything starts. I know it will not be easy because socially, culturally, religion, these three factors are heavy, factors that affect heavily on this mindset. The second level that where we need to act is policy. This policy at the Faculty of Medicine, where we need an equal number of men and women admitted, I think have helped address the issue. And we need to encourage that in other settings. Publication, even for the appointment of top managers.
You know, as a scientist, you worked and studied in the UK. Let's look at it from that perspective. How does Ghana compare in terms of supporting mothers and scientists with families?
Yes, so definitely the UK is far ahead of Ghana in terms of having these structures. So, in the UK, you have 6 months of your maternity leave, which you can extend to a year. So by the time you come back from maternity leave, your child is already walking around and eating very well, right? But imagine leaving your 3 months old child at home. I remember the phrase that I left home was quite challenging. I didn't have a choice, right? It was either I return or you stay at home without a salary, right? So in terms of that, the UK is far ahead. You can even go for maternity leave for a whole year. But in Ghana, we have just 6 months. In the UK, I remember at the university, they had a playroom or a nursery room where if you had gone to the library to study, you could have your child there playing. We don't have that here in Ghana. I'm yet to see that. So you can see organizations making intentional efforts to accommodate nursing mothers or mothers who want to bring their children home, but we don't have a lot of that here in Ghana. One of my office mates had, when I was a PhD student, had children, and the council, I'm sure it is the council, so, or the government in a way, so there was some sort of support for mothers every week. So every week she could take her child to Ekrech not pay for a number of hours. So she knows, okay, this week I have 5 hours of paid childcare. So I'm going to come to the office for these hours, and afterwards I'll pick my child. I don't have that. If I have to take my child to the crèche, I have to pay for my own. So those are some of the differences we have. Hopefully with time we'll get there with all these advocacies. Maybe this interview gets listened to by some of our policy leaders and they try to make some adjustments to these.
I think what you've said has to do with a lot of policy advice, you know, to make things better. How should things change in Ghana in terms of addressing the issues we are talking about?
I think people should understand that if you have a baby, it shouldn't be a disadvantage to you, right? They should be more supportive of you, because once you provide that support for a scientist, it means that I will spend more time on my work without worrying about what's happening to my baby who is a few kilometers at home, right? So, and anytime I'm in my environment, okay, I'm thinking, okay, like I said, like what's happening at home, how can I quickly finish this and attend to my baby. But if my baby was just here, I would just have easily worked and dash out a few minutes to look after her. So we should think of it as we think about work within some environment. So if we want to be within an environment, it's good to provide us with all the support we need so that I can focus on research. Now, if I want to do research in mass takes time. But now I spend only a few hours at my workplace, which means that we start thinking about a problem. At the moment when you are going very deep, you have to go home and take care of your child because you have a baby. If there were other support systems, I could have spent a longer time at my workplace, and hopefully I'll have that breakthrough that I will get. So people should understand that providing all these support systems will mean that you have your scientists flourishing, producing more ideas, more research and innovations that we need to drive our economies or countries.
Do you have any words of advice? You know, any words of advice for young girls who would like to be like you when they grow up?
Yes. So I usually say three things. Dream. So I didn't talk a bit about my background, but when I was growing up, I didn't see any mathematician around me. There were a lot of vices, social vices in my community, but I saw beyond those vices. I wanted to make impact. So I dreamt beyond my surroundings. So even though my surroundings showed something very grim, I wanted to do more. So dream beyond your surroundings. The fact that you don't see any mentors around you shouldn't mean that you cannot be what you dream to be. Secondly, believe in your dream. So you can have a dream that I want to be a mathematician, but if you personally don't believe in it, then it means it just goes away, right? So believe in your dream and also find people who believe in that dream. For me, I'm not here because I only dreamt or I believed in it, but I had people who believed in me. So these people have been my mentors. I find people who believe in that dream and finally take action. So you can have a dream and believe in it, but if you don't take action or gradually work towards it, then it's not going to become a reality. Maths is challenging, so I want to become a mathematician. The action will be that I persistently work on my math problems, consistently think about my problems, consistently work towards, I teach, so consistently improve my teaching methods so that I become a better teacher. So dream, believe, and take action. That would be my advice to anyone listening.
I am a mother to younger students. There are many daughters who want me to be their mothers. Unfortunately, I don't have enough time, but there are there are three protégés in particular with whom I'm very close to. Yes, I do mentor. I think we need to act at the policy level. In Rwanda, for example, President Kagame said that at the parliament they have 60% of women. I think it's the country with the highest number of women parliaments in the world, I think. So at the policy level, we need to have this positive affirmation. I think that's how he said. So where we give equal chance to women and men, and so this policy will act on three levels. First of all, strong support system for women workers. At workplace, even in a medical school, we need a kind of creche where we keep children. Because in Africa, when a woman does not have children, it's not good. It's like, it's a requirement. I know that you don't have to, but that's how. So people feel pressure to have kids, but having kids should not stop us in our career or from evolving or from writing. So if we can have the support system where we can raise our kids while keeping working, I think that would be a strong action. And the second thing is that at the primary level, we need to change the program so that we remove this barrier where we think science is for men or for boys, because it starts there, and then literature, history is for women. So the mindset needs also to change. And finally, we need men to support us. I'm a mother of boys, and sometimes we have men who support us, but we also have men who are a big obstacles. So I want my boys to be an example and to help the women around them. I think that we also need support from men. Educate our boys, educate the men around the world that they could be agent of change by supporting women, not just thinking they are above and we are below them and we are just there to serve them food or whatever. So this is what I have to say.
More does need to happen at the policy level, as is happening right now at the University of Yaoundé's Faculty of Medicine in Cameroon, where 50% of students must be women. But cultural mindsets are slower to progress. As more men step up to close the gender gap, the quicker our world will change its preconceptions about women and their role in society. So, that's all for this episode of Science in Africa. In Nature Careers Podcast, I'm Aki Jimo, Chief Editor of Nature Africa. Thanks again to Angela Tabiri and Adija Amani. And thanks to you for listening.